Hey, it's the Real Estate Steps Podcast. Welcome to your number one resource for real estate information. Welcome back once again to our Real Estate Steps Podcast. And this is Bob talking, and I'm here with Nick and Amir, and it's NBA, Nick, Bob, and Amir.
That's right.
Our host. And just to remind you that we're combined experience in real estate is over 70 years, and we're active agents, and Nick is a broker. Wait, you're a broker to be, aren't you?
I'm a broker to be.
Yeah.
And Amir is the broker.
And Amir is the broker. So the information that we're providing here is really based on what we're actually encountering and dealing with on a regular basis in the Sacramento area market. So always stay tuned to come back for more, because a lot of good information that's relevant to what's going on in real estate today. Nick, what do you got going on today?
A subject that always been interested in is manufactured housing. A lot of people know them as mobile homes. When people think of mobile homes, some people unfortunately think of trailer homes, which are not the same thing. Okay, the quality is completely different. One of the problems with manufactured homes has always been financing these things. And Freddie Mac has announced recently that they will now allow conventional financing of manufactured housing. Just some quick statistics here. There's 22 million people in this country that live in manufactured homes. It's a $3 billion a year market. And the new average manufactured home price is $73,000. This is what they're saying, real property manufactured housing, and we're going to discuss this, what the definition of that is. This comes right from Freddie Mac. Definition: these are homes where the borrower finances and owns both the land and home, and it meets all applicable real property requirements. Freddie Mac currently supports financing of this type of manufactured home. We currently support financing for real property manufactured homes, but we want to do more. Though duty to serve, we're working with industry stakeholders to purchase more loans used to finance manufactured homes tiled as real property, enhance current products and create new offerings, provide consumer education to help borrowers navigate the real property market, and expand our affordable housing vision by providing conventional loan financing with Choice Home, a new type of manufactured home. So let's talk about what they mean by real property. And Amir, you know, we discussed this briefly.
Yes.
Real property is property that is affixed to, or is a structure that is affixed to property. So this financing for manufactured homes is only for manufactured homes that are affixed to the land. Okay, it's not for manufactured homes that are in a mobile home park that many of us see out there.
That's right, Nick. So mobile home, manufactured home can be real or personal property, right? So most people, when you mention a mobile home, think like, hey, I don't want to live in trailer park because, the negative connection with mobile homes. Check some mobile homes in Bay Area. So mobile homes selling for $300,000-$400,000 in the mobile home park, right? So it's really location, location, location. But the thing is, Nick, what you said, mobile homes attached to the permanent foundation, which we had multiple transactions, and I know some of our agents did. So they are a real property. So it goes through title company, getting title insurance, etc. Problem before was the financing. Most lenders couldn't finance. There was a few transactions in Bay Area on a lot, not in the mobile home park, and there was a real property. It was very hard to get financing. Now with the new change, it's going to be much easier. That's one thing. Another thing I wanted to mention about and talk about mobile homes in mobile home parks, right? So many people think it's a bad investment, or some people don't want to live there. Now, it's getting more and more popular, especially in California, because they're more affordable. Yes, you're paying a lot rent. But there's multiple parks, like especially for the retirement community, 55 plus people downsizing, going to mobile home parks because it's nice community with all the stuff in it, clubhouse, activities, pool, etc. But I did quite a few mobile home transactions myself and flip. So yes, this is a message to investors who wants to invest in the mobile homes. You can buy, fixing them up and flip, doing owner financing. This is like generating your own ATM machine. And they're not expensive, and they're pretty much recession proof, because if recession hits like we had a couple of years ago, they were much more popular because people don't want it to go rent. So they already own the house, and mobile home is an excellent opportunity, alternative to renting, because instead of paying the rent, you're paying for your own home. It's mobile home, but which you can later sell. If you're renting, you cannot sell anything. You're not building your equity. Yeah, before then, you can buy homes for, you know, under $10,000. Now I'm talking about used homes. So now it's 40 to 50, 60. So they appreciate 3, 4, 5 times.
Yeah. The average new price on a new manufactured home is $73,000.
And you're talking nationwide. So California, new home selling for $120,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Depending on where it's located, obviously. But right. One of the things I ran into, and this was just 6 months ago, is a friend of mine wanted to do that, but the park, each park has its own regulations, I discovered, and that the park manager has to approve the sale. And he wanted to, we came in there and wanted to buy a mobile home, and this was up in the Citrus Heights area. Park manager said, nope, you've got to occupy the home for 6 months
before you can do that. You're absolutely right. So the biggest problem, if you, for example, buying a house and flipping in a mobile home park, it's a property manager.
Correct.
And building a relationship with them, because they cannot be your best friend or biggest enemy. So they make decision who can, even if you have a perfect buyer buying cash, but they have a bad credit because they have bankruptcy, short sale, foreclosure, good chance they're not gonna approve it. And you lose the buyer, and you are obligated to keep paying the lot rent, which is not cheap, $500, $600 to $800. I mean, Rockland Mobile Home Park has $850 now, I believe. Very nice park, but you're paying every month $850 to have a home in the park. So you're right. So the first step, unfortunately, some of the parks are very strict. Mm-hmm. So they wanted the, you know, best borrower there, pretty much client, because you know, with the perfect score, perfect income, etc. You know, which is not easy, because these people will be probably looking to buy a regular home.
Correct. But it was interesting to discover how much that was a factor. The manager said, nope, not at all. And six months owner occupied, they're going, I want to flip this in a month. And they go, no can do. And so each park has to be somebody you have to contact. But I want to get back to your point, Nick. You're talking about a manufactured home on real property.
Yes, yeah.
Real property means that the person who owns the manufactured home also owns the property. It can't be leased property.
Exactly. And again, going back to this program, and again, this comes right from this Freddie Mac article. The program is called Choice Home. It's a 2-year pilot that will allow conventional financing for certain manufactured homes. Okay. Mm-hmm. These homes that will be eligible for the program have features like permanent foundations and pitched roofs. So it's a permanent home.
Right.
Okay. For all respects and service, it's a permanent home. If a factory-built home meets or exceeds specifications, it will be granted a Choice Home certification. What they're talking about is it's a HUD code, a construction and safety standard put out by HUD, mm-hmm. that manufactured homes have to abide by. And these are standards that are for the whole nation, okay, for the whole country. Building standards in California are a little bit different than they are, say, in Chicago, where they have severe winters, or in Kansas, where they have tornadoes and stuff like that. These standards, these construction codes, are actually pretty good, okay? These homes are well-built. They're built in factories. They use good materials, and they're pretty good homes once you think about it. It's a good way for someone to buy a plot of land and then, you know, hook up the sewage and the electricity and put a manufactured home on there. So it's only for homes sitting on property, like Amir was saying earlier. These are, you know, this is real property. It's considered real property.
Okay, that's good to know.
The average cost to manufacture these things also is 50% or less, okay, depending, again, on where you go in the country. Anywhere from $49 a square foot versus, you know, $107 a square foot. But I don't think you're going to find $107 a square foot in this area. It's more like, you know what, $150 a square foot?
Yeah, or more. So close to 200.
Or close to 200.
So what happens if you you're shopping for a home and you actually see a manufactured home that's already on the property? Can you? What kind of financing can you get for that?
You can get this financing, and this program, it's almost like an FHA program. It's 3% down. This choice home is 3% down. There is mortgage insurance you're going to have to pay. The beauty of that mortgage insurance is up after 2 years. You can refinance a home, or you can get rid of it if you can prove that there's enough equity in the home. Okay, you can get rid of that. Unlike FHA, it's on there permanently. That mortgage insurance is on there permanently, unless, of course, you refinance the home and go with a conventional loan. So it's more of a conventional loan with a 3% down, okay, and mortgage insurance. So it's a pretty good program. They're trying this now because, like Amir said earlier, people have had issues and banks have had issues putting out loans for manufactured homes, even if they were on permanent foundations and on property. They always had an issue with that.
Do they go in, inspect what the infrastructure is? Because you have to either have water or a well or a septic systems for the sewer systems. Does that have any bearing on that loan?
Yes, I mean, if you mean when you're building new or putting new?
Right.
Yeah, so you have to apply for the building permit, and so it's just regular, I had a land up in the Yuba Gap, so I was planning to put up one, but it has to be really snow resistant. So you have to get a permit for well, for septic connections and everything else, yeah.
Can that be wrapped into the financing, or is that going to be an out-of-pocket expense?
That's a good question. So that would be more like construction loan, so we have to find out.
Yeah, that's something that has to be checked.
That would be like building a new house, so you don't get you could get a construction loan, but I would imagine the same here. So with putting a new mobile home, a manufactured home, so it would be the same.
So you could theoretically get two loans, one a construction loan to do the infrastructure as well and septic. Then you could get the FHA loan for the manufactured home.
Possibly. I mean, construction loan works. I mean, you get construction loan, and once the house is built, you refi to the regular conventional loan or FHA. So I would imagine it's similar here. So we will have to find out more information about it.
That's great, Amir. What are the things that you're seeing?
So with the mobile homes, the mobile homes, for example, in parks, they are actually not going through the title companies. They are not real estate property, real properties. They are personal. So the HCD is Housing Community Development Agency. So it's regulating those. So they are like combination of building department, right? So they have inspectors out there. If you're installing new mobile home, you have to get not a building permit. You're getting a permit with HCD. Which is right here in Sacramento for all California. So I'm part owner of one mobile home park. So every time we put a mobile home in the park, we have to go to the HCD. It's like dealing with the building department. So it's not actually worse than the building department, I would say, because there are too many regulations there. So for mobile home parks owners, so it's easier to put a trailers. So they are actually not HCD regulated because they're just a regular trailer, I mean, like RVs. But we're talking about mobile homes. So mobile homes, when you buy here, so there, for example, if you get an escrow with mobile home in a mobile home park, you still go to the title company. Not every title company has is doing the mobile home transactions. Some of them do. And then they regulate it and coordinate everything with HCD.
Interesting. So you've got to really pay attention to that, knowing which title company is the one to pick for.
Yes. I mean, the listing agent, obviously will escrow with the title company. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, obviously, the biggest issue is getting approved with the park and at the same time getting a loan if they're getting a loans, right? Most transactions are cash or owner financing. So owner already owned the house for so many years, they can finance with 20, 30, 50% down payment.
Interesting. Are you seeing, and because we have baby boomers retiring, about 10,000 a day are retiring, are you seeing any increase in mobile home or manufactured homes being built or constructed, or is it just, because I'm looking around, I'm seeing new homes being built, but I'm not seeing any mobile home parks being built. Is that, that's kind of an interesting.
It is very interesting what you just mentioned. It's very hard to get a permit to build a new mobile home park, with all the regulations. And I was listening for some mobile home park experts. They're saying, don't even try to buy the land and build a mobile home park. It's much easier to buy existing mobile home park and remodel than build a new one. And that's nationwide. So they're expecting with difficulties, and some states don't even allow mobile home parks, it's going to be harder and harder to, they will probably go away, I mean, theoretically, in, you know, 100, 200 years, whatever. The thing is, because mobile home, land for mobile homes is not the highest use. So you will not get a mobile home land in Sacramento region, for example, because you can develop this land for, you know, apartment complexes or offices or condos and get higher use for the mobile homes, for the land, right? Makes sense?
Yeah, so you can, in other words, you can go vertical, whereas you can't go vertical on a mobile home.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, correct. So, but yeah, I see especially mobile homes on a permanent foundation to be even more popular now, because we had how many, 8,000-9,000 homes burned in Sacramento, in California, just last year.
Right.
So it's going to be high demand for the for the housing. It is already. So mobile homes, it's virtually you can have within 1 month up and running and moving.
Right.
Versus building houses will take 6 to 8, 12 months.
My word. That's
So it's so much land, especially like, let's say, you know, up to Santa Rosa, North Redding. So it's so many empty parcels you can just develop, you know, with a septic and well, and put a mobile home.
Or a manufactured home.
Or manufactured home, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Are we seeing a trend where mobile home landowners, the guys that own these parks, eventually just selling out to developers? Are we seeing that?
Not right now, because if you own a mobile home, imagine a mobile home park, there's some parks here in Sacramento, you know, like 200 units, and they charge $600 to $700 a month.
Right.
For very low maintenance.
And the maintenance is very low, yeah. Right.
So you're charging people for renting the lot dirt. So it's a cash cow for the owners. So they
income is pretty high on that, the net operating income, because you don't have a lot of expenses.
Net operating income is very high, yes.
Yeah.
Expense as well. Correct.
Interesting. Nice. Now, this would be interesting, you know, the micro homes that you're hearing about.
Like tiny homes?
Tiny homes, right.
Yeah.
Tiny homes, micro homes. I mean, that's almost like a manufactured home as well. But what if somebody had, say, 10 acres of land, and they just wanted to create, you know, subdivide it for manufactured homes, not mobile homes, but for manufactured homes. Is that something, is that a trend that would begin to grow?
You have to look at the expenses, you know, because if you want 10 acres to subdivide to, you know, 40 parcels, for example, you know, four per acre, you have to bring 40, the utility cost is expensive, you know. That upfront cost is high, because you have to have either well or, you know, and if it's separate parts, you have to have every single separate well, or maybe you can generate one well and then set up some kind of HOA to share the cost. But most people looked at the cost upfront, which probably not feasible right now with so many regulations in California.
I see.
The infrastructure is expensive.
Okay,
yeah.
To put that all in,
yeah.
And make that, okay. I'm always thinking if that would grow or not, because I know a couple of people that have put a couple of manufactured homes on one piece of property, but it's their own private situation that they're doing.
Yeah, that's good. So we talked about
the accessory dwelling units that might be, and that's a subject we'll bring up in the future.
Because you can put the extra unit on your land, so like in-laws quarter, studio, so when you're not supposed to rent if it's not multi-unit zoning.
Mm-hmm.
But most people, you know, put out for the like in-laws, so if you have teenager kids and so.
Interesting, so. Yeah. Well, one of the things I've been looking at, just completely changing gears, is I like hosting open houses, and I watch how people come in to an open house and just see how they inspect the house and so forth. And so I thought, what should buyers really be doing when they show up at an open house? And I came up with a top five list. The thing that about going to an open house is, it's like going on a first date. You know, you've looked at the pictures online, you've kind of made an assessment. And, you know, these are the people that are, you know, intentionally going to this open house. They didn't just wander in because they saw the signs. But you've looked at it, you've inspected everything, and then you're here. It is the day you're going to go actually meet the house on your first date, if you will. But the first thing that would tell somebody is use your nose. How is there too much of a scent in the house?
You're talking about the first date, or
yeah, the first. You're talking date. About the first date, or you're talking about the house?
The house. If you're going on, if you're going to the house, is there too much fragrance in the house? Mm. Okay, and if there's too much fragrance, why? What are they trying to cover? Okay, and what's going on with the house? I was in real estate training. They're saying, oh, bake some cookies or have some potpourri, and have it smelling nice.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that can actually work against the whole situation. But the idea is, when you go into the house, each room, pay attention to how it smells. Because you can walk in, and of course the agent, depending on what they do, they could have some nice things smelling in the living room or the kitchen or whatever. But what does it smell like in the other bedrooms? Okay.
Yeah,
pets and all of that sort of thing. And the other thing too is open up the closets. And what does this closet smell like? Okay, just the little telltale thing, because it'll kind of give you an idea of what could possibly be there. The other thing is to open up the cabinets under the sink, and what do they smell like? Just real quick.
Musty smell.
Of
mold.
But these are something that you can do just very quickly, and it'll kind of let you know what's going on. Now, if you're in love with the house but you weigh the object, okay, well, it's not that bad. Okay, that's fine. Look closely at the walls and the ceilings, and the flooring. And one of the things that I like to do is look at where the ceiling meets the wall, okay, and look for cracks. That's the other second thing is now use your eyes. Obviously, you're looking at all the layout of the house, and that's fine. But yes, you're going to see little cracks here and there. But if you start seeing like really wider cracks, or you see patches, that's when you kind of go, what's going on here? Another thing that people don't really know to look at is on the corners of windows. Cracks will appear there if there was settling there, or if the window has had any leaking going on. And so that's another thing is to look for, is the cracks.
And then one more thing here, so cracks outside where the eaves meets, where the wall meets at the roof.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because inside sometimes with the tape what they use on the drywall, they may adjust for some cracks, but outside if you have stucco, for example, you will see it right away.
Right. Also, you're looking for caulking. Okay, have they maintained the caulking on the outside around the windows? Because that does have to be maintained. It's not something that is a one and done kind of a situation.
Good that you mentioned this. Most people don't think about it. So they, it's caulked, I don't need to put anything else, right? So, but 3 to 5 years, you have to paint the siding if it's siding. So depending what quality paint you use, and then if it's south side or west side, so they get a higher sun exposure than you have to do maybe more often. But these are the things what you have to do. And it's like changing an oil in your car, so you cannot just drive for 20 years without changing it.
Right.
Absolutely. And one of the biggest problems with homes is dry rot. We see it a lot, okay? And a lot of that could be prevented if the people would just do simple maintenance, like Amir was saying. Many times, just paint. Just keep that wood painted, keep it covered from the moisture, and you won't have these issues, you won't have these problems.
Yeah.
So that's very true. I got to interject here. You were talking about scents and smells. Be careful with the baked cookies, because I did an open house once for this woman. I met the owner there, and she says, "I just made fresh cookies." She read online that the smell of chocolate chip cookies is appealing for buyers coming in. The problem was she burnt the cookies. So the house smelled like burnt cookies. So I had the windows open. After she left, I threw the cookies out. I had the windows open. It's the funniest thing.
Yeah.
And also showing homes. I remember I showed a home once, and this was a home that was on the market for a while. So the doors and windows were closed up. We walked into one room, and the buyers liked the home. The problem was we walked into one room, and the stench of cat urine was so bad. I mean, it made my eyes water. And that was a real a major point, because the sellers were aware of it. They were willing to tear out the carpet, They tore the carpet out and the scent was still there. It got so bad, it somehow permeated into the concrete, okay?
Right,
and,
right.
And apparently there's things you can do to treat the concrete. Whatever they did, it killed the sale is what happened. Is the buyers finally said, we can't live with this. You know, we're just not going to buy this house.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the cat urine is very, very strong. So
yeah, so be careful with some of that stuff. You're absolutely right. Your nose, your senses.
Mm-hmm.
If you're walking on a floor and it feels spongy, you know, it tells you something's going on. Mm-hmm. If you see something, if you're walking on a floor and it feels sloped, is this floor sloped? What's going on here? Look for stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's your senses can reveal a lot of things, and you're right about smells. You walk into, I open closets and stuff, and I smell if the room's been closed. If it smells musty, you know, there's possible water damage or mold growing. Be careful with all that stuff.
Another thing that you can do real easily is just flip the light on your phone, okay? And just shine the light underneath the cabinets, especially where there's plumbing. There's a plumbing in the sink, a kitchen, or the bathrooms. Those little LED lights on your phones will expose things very quickly, and you're looking for gray and white spots. Okay, you're not looking for black necessarily, but your white spots will show up as well, and those lights on your phones actually expose it much better.
good.
Another point, take the time to actually open and slide the window open, see if you can, and see how hard it is, and then look at the window to see if it's fogged.
Right.
A lot of times,
what does that mean?
On the dual pane windows, when they're fogged or they have condensation on the inside, the vacuum seal of those windows has broken, and all of the insulation. Those windows typically have argon gas, and argon gas is not poisonous or anything like that, but it's a huge insulator. When you see condensation inside the window, that means that gas is now gone. There's no more insulating properties in that window.
Can you fix it?
You can replace it. You have to replace it. And typically, even to the cost of fixing it is the same cost as replacing it, by the way.
Right.
Replace those units can be upwards to $500. And they call that a insulated glass unit, is what they call that. The labor to get that custom made and put in there.
No, forget it.
Put a new window in there.
It's funny. I mean, I was showing houses, even newer homes, they have broken seals. So you cannot. You can live with it, but it's obviously it's visual, and you lose some energy, but not. It's probably nothing significant because the biggest energy loser in the house is are the windows and doors anyway.
Correct.
So because obviously walls have insulation. So, but they're visually obviously not appealing, and then at some point they have to be replaced anyway.
Exactly. Another little trick is put your hand on the glass, and depending on the weather, the glass should be the same temperature as the wall. And if they're working correctly, they should be the same temperature, you know, very close. But if the window is very cold and the wall is warm, that means your heat is escaping through the window.
It's going through the window.
If it's during the summertime, the glass is warm and the wall is cool, again, you're not getting, even though visually it's still clear. That's another trick, because the whole point of that is it's supposed to insulate it from that. And then finally, when you're at the house, stop for a second when you're on the front lawn and look around the neighborhood. Look at the pride of ownership that you're seeing around the neighborhood and listen for the sounds of cars, motorcycles, music, whatever. Just kind of look at the activity, what you're noticing on there. And then when you're in the backyard, go to each fence and just knock on the fence. And you'll know if there's a dog in there in the backyard and if he's going to start barking or not.
Right. But it's always saying, if you're not buying a house, you're buying the neighborhood. So you live for the neighbors. Ideally, you know, a long time before you move or sell. On the other hand, maybe it's a large barking dog there. Maybe if you like the house, you shouldn't decide not to buy a house because of dog. Because the neighbor dog unfortunately will die within a couple of years, right? So neighbors may move and whatever. So on the other hand, you have to look the big picture. You know, combining a house with the neighbors, obviously see how the proud the neighborhood is. You know, if they're maintaining the house, maintaining the front yard, You don't want to see junky, you know, cars, bunch of cars in front of some house to work in the cars, and who knows, you know,
right.
what garbage or whatever. I mean, you build a relationship, so of course, you know, you want to live next to the neighbor, not, you know, you share the fence.
Right.
You want to, whenever you replace a fence, you want to share the cost for something. Yeah, don't fight with the neighbors.
Those are just things to be that will give you tips, you know, alertness as to what's going to be there in the house. But anyway, thank you everybody for listening. This wraps up this podcast. Next week, we're going to be talking about some things for marketing for the real estate professional, spam words that you don't want to put in your subject line. And thank you. And again, be sure to subscribe and share this podcast. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Real Estate Steps Podcast. We'll be back next week with some fresh topics about real estate news that's pertinent and relevant to you. You can follow us at Facebook or Twitter at Real Estate Steps. Be sure to subscribe to us at your favorite podcast streaming site. Also, you can follow us at realestatesteps.net and contact us, email us. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week.